U.S. Democratic Senator Kamala Harris on Monday declared she would seek her party's presidential nomination. Harris is still in her first term as California's junior senator. She rose in the public eye for her grilling of Trump cabinet members and her support for Christine Blasey Ford, who accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. She has a long history with California's tech firms from her time as AG, and in 2013 said she worked well with the industry.
From Havana to L.A., eyes were on the skies Sunday evening for a spooky spectacle, a rare super blood wolf moon. The reddish color is from rays of sunlight passing through Earth's polluted atmosphere as the moon falls into our planet's shadow. That's why it's a blood moon. Americans called a full moon in January a wolf moon because of wolves that would howl in hunger outside villages in the winter.
The World Economic Forum in Davos hasn't even started yet, and it's all about who isn't here. The scene is set at the snow-blanketed Swiss ski resort for the annual gathering of government, business and civil society leaders. But an array of crises is keeping the big names away. Trump and his shutdown, May and her Brexit, Macron and his yellow vests, and the WEF's own stark warning of global headwinds isn't helping either.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's January 22nd. It's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway, at least for those of you who did have to work yesterday. If you're just getting back with us, starting after the long holiday weekend, you're not alone. Lots of folks, including the markets, were closed yesterday, so we're glad you're back regardless of whether or not you had yesterday off. We've put together a really good program for you this morning. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about robotics engineering recruiting and how finding people to fit these jobs will improve our economy, could improve our economy. Scott Sargis will be here from Sargis Strategic Search Corporation. We'll have him on at about 5:40 this morning to talk a little bit about this. Also this morning, digital presence. We all have one. It's growing. AI is taking off as well. The Urban Library Council is taking a role in this front and center, launching a new initiative to empower libraries to stand at sort of the forefront of this movement, digital movement, the AI movement. We'll be talking with the CEO of the Urban Library Council momentarily. We'll bring in Susan Benton in just a few minutes. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Financial markets will open today again after being closed for the Martin Luther King holiday yesterday. When the markets open up, Wall Street will be coming off another strong week last week. This morning, there's some weakness, however, on the markets. The Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures are all lower by anywhere from half a percent or more to nearly a percent on the NASDAQ. Dow futures are off 168 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 64 points this morning. In Europe, markets are in the red with the FTSE in London, the DAX in Germany, the CAC in France, all off anywhere from a third to a half a percent. And in Asia, lots of red on the screen as well. The Nikkei is going to end the day down nearly a half a percent, nearly 100 points. The Hang Seng off nearly 200 points, three quarters of a percent. The Shanghai is off more than a percent, nearly a percent and a quarter. And oil is trading at $53.02 a barrel. That's down about 78 cents, or nearly a percent and a half. In some top headlines this morning, there are reports the U.S. will formally ask Canada to send a top executive of the Chinese telecommunications company Huawei to the U.S. to face charges. The Toronto Globe and Mail reports Washington will make the request before January 30th. Canada arrested the Huawei chief financial officer on December 1st on allegations her company violated U.S. sanctions against Iran. Canada arrested her at the request of the U.S. and claims she defrauded, claims she defrauded a number of American financial institutions in dealings with Iran. Amazon is continuing to expand its ocean shipping services, reportedly sending more than 4 million goods from China to the U.S. last year. Experts believe this is part of Amazon's plan to control most of their transportation network, including trucking, airplane, and finally ships. Through freight shipping, the company either handles the trans-Pacific portion of the goods journey or completes an end-to-end services, picking up in China, shipping to the United States, and then carrying to a fulfillment center. The program was initially only available to Chinese manufacturers before expanding to include the U.S. near the end of 2018. Let's begin front and center this morning with a conversation about how libraries are getting involved in the digital revolution and the digital future. The Urban Libraries Council has launched a new initiative to empower North American public libraries to be at the forefront of the movement to make sure that all digital access is equitable and inclusive, especially where it pertains to AI. Joining us this morning is Susan Benton. She's the CEO of the Urban Library Council. Susan, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Did I describe that right, what you guys are launching and getting into, and how important is this?
Actually, you did a great job at it. It's very important to our citizens, our residents of our cities and our counties. Libraries have always been about information and access to information. And artificial intelligence is really information data on steroids, exponential steroids, actually. But we have a lot of data, and it's being used for decision-making, and it's being used for collection to be able to understand people's patterns of work as well as their play. And there are opportunities for good as well as opportunities for risk.
The Library Council and libraries specifically are getting involved to do what specifically?
Well, in part, we want to make sure that people understand the implications of artificial intelligence. There are real implications for our economy. There are some projections that large portions of our workforce and the jobs that currently exist will not exist in the future. So we want to make sure that people have the ongoing skills, the digital skills that they need every day to have ability to participate in the economy. In Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel had created an initiative called Connect Chicago, and that was bringing together both the public and the private sector to work together on making sure all of the citizens in Chicago have the digital skills that they need. Well, Chicago Public Library is working in the neighborhoods one-on-one with people and in small groups, again, to level up everyone's digital skills. Those skills are going to be really important as we go further into the 21st century and our life becomes more digitized. So we need to be able to have the skills to actually participate in the work, but we also need to be discerning users of data and make sure that we're understanding what data is out there and that we're contributing from our own personal lives when we're using our smartphones or our iPads or we're on a computer. Walking around the city and our location is collected throughout the day. All of that has opportunities to give very important, insightful information that can be used in very good ways, but they can also be used in very negative ways, too. And we want people to be aware of all of those aspects.
I think sometimes, Susan, we take for granted that everybody is smart and knows all of this. And smart may be the wrong word, is knowledgeable about it, has the education or the background or has been involved in this enough to know all of this. But that's not the case. And so I think it makes sense that when all of us have questions, or at least in the past when we have questions, and I know a lot of people still do, they go to the library to learn more about this. It makes sense that your organization and the individual libraries are involved in this education.
You're absolutely right. You described that perfectly. You know, every time when we're using a device and we get a notice that we have to sign a letter of agreement or a new agreement because of an application that we're using, oftentimes the agreements are so complex, it's very hard to understand what the key elements are. You know, one of the things we're talking about at the Urban Libraries Council, is there some way that we can help people understand in a better way, in a more straightforward way, what are you signing on to when you click that I agree button whenever you're getting a new application or you're starting to work on a new initiative on your computer?
Susan, I'm curious how this is going to roll out in libraries. I know you're still having some meetings and working group sessions about this, but how will we see this roll out in libraries?
You know, you're absolutely right. We've just started the work. So right now we're developing the framing for what is going to be the most helpful for the residents in our communities and helping them become knowledgeable about artificial intelligence, and how it affects their lives on a daily basis. So our first meeting occurred 2 weeks ago. We're now working on definitions that will help demystify artificial intelligence and begin to identify all of the elements, the facets of artificial intelligence that we think will be most helpful to citizens going forward in their daily lives. You know, there's so many aspects to AI. There are almost layers and layers of facets that we want people to be knowledgeable about, but we need to get our arms around those first and then build our own staff understanding and skills in that area. We know that there's a lot to do, and that's why we've started this work.
Some of the working group sessions have been held and with leaders all over the country. You mentioned Chicago. Chicago's part of that, but you have a nice mix of people here from all over the country and Canada as well taking part in these discussions. So that should produce some pretty good stuff moving forward.
Absolutely. You know, one of the the largest public library in the world is Toronto Public Library, and it was at that meeting. They're doing a tremendous amount of work on artificial intelligence. The city itself right now is looking at creating a part of the city which will be the most digitized neighborhood in North America. Well, as they're doing that, they're needing to decide if this is the most digitized city or neighborhood in the city, what's going to happen to all of that data that's collected in that neighborhood? Who's going to own that data, and how is it going to be used? Actually, there is a public-private group who's come together advising the development of that neighborhood, and they've identified the Toronto Public Library as the holder of that information, of that data.
What does the future hold in terms of what are the challenges going forward for libraries? You mentioned that the data, there's a lot of data. It costs a lot sometimes to store that, although it's getting cheaper. What does the future hold for libraries and data together?
Well, you know, data is really kind of at the heart of everything we do. Data is information, it's knowledge, and that's what libraries have always been about. So this is really our sweet spot. It's just changing the way we're going to be working with it and the kind of the envelope in which the data exists. It's much more fluid and fast-moving than it used to be when it was only a piece of data or a bit of knowledge, a fact that was in the book. Now it's electronic, and it can be combined in many, many different ways.
Do you see a future working well, libraries and AI together, or does AI threaten libraries in any way?
No, not at all. If anything, I think it just adds to the value and the importance of public libraries. I think artificial intelligence, again, it's really everything that libraries are about. It just takes it up, you know, another several notches, if you will.
Oftentimes we see movies portraying what the future might look like. I'm wondering what the future library might look like. If you had to look 20 years down the road, will we still see rows of books, or will there be giant computer screens with a giant AI machine in the center of the library? Have you what's your future vision?
Well, you know, there will always be lots of different resources in the library. In fact, there still are books, even though there are many, many computers in libraries today. Some of our libraries actually are testing the use of a robot in the library. And it's kind of a fun thing to have not only a person greeting you as you come in the door, but novel to have a robot there also welcoming you. It's a way for people to start to get engaged with artificial intelligence through a robot wandering around the library. You know, I think it's going to be a pretty exciting and rich time for us to come into the library and as residents work together on learning about artificial intelligence and working on, again, continuously developing our skills in this area. We've got a long way to go as a workforce in changing the skills that we need to be actively involved in the economy, and I think that the library is a perfect place, or one of the perfect places for that to happen.
I agree with you. Susan, we appreciate you being with us this morning. All the best to you and your organization.
Thank you so very much. Have a good day.
You too. Susan Benton, the CEO of the Urban Library Council. You can find them online at urbanlibraries.org.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Robotics engineering recruiting. Let's have a conversation about that. We all have heard stories about how the robots are coming to take over all of our jobs. But that's not necessarily the case. We're going to have people to not only build those robots, but control them and work with them. Scott Sargis is with us this morning, the president at Strategic Search Corporation, to talk further about robotics engineering recruiting. Scott's company, Strategic Search Corporation, focuses on recruitment in technical and engineering recruiting. And it's good to have you back, Scott. Good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Happy Tuesday, Steve.
Yes, same to you. We had a conversation before you came on this morning with the Urban Libraries Council, and they're talking about making sure everybody understands what AI is going to bring and what it's all about and the digital universe. There is a, you know, kind of not a level playing field where knowledge is concerned. This notion that robots are going to take over everything is probably true on some level, isn't it, or no?
Well, if you look at history, and history repeats itself, Steve, when the E-age came with the digital computers coming along, a lot of people who were typists and other types of jobs lost their jobs. But other jobs were created, like cybersecurity. And that is a normal trend in history. And that will happen again, and it's already happening again with robotics, because people need to program the robots. They need to come up with people who can fix the robots, etc.
So talk to us a little bit about recruiting for this area. Robotics engineering probably covers a lot of different technical areas. What are employers looking for right now, and how can you help them?
Well, you know, as you said, Steve, there's a lot of aspects to a robot. There's vision. There's the actual hardware design of robots. There's the, as you mentioned with the previous guest, artificial intelligence to guide the robots, if you will. So there's people that are needed to come up with new vision systems, programming those sensors related to that, the AI and machine learning systems that drive robots. People who need to fix the robots. So right now, as you know, the Labor Department with the most recent figures came up with 312,000 jobs created. And, you know, unemployment in those related areas for robotics is near zero. Engineers, technical people, IT people. So there's actually more job openings related to robotics than there are actual candidates for those jobs.
And that's always a good situation to be in. And so as we move forward here, that's only probably going to get better, right? I mean, because if we are in such a hot jobs market and we start getting everybody employed and this technology keeps moving forward, that, I would imagine, will only improve?
Well, it will, but there's a caveat, because a recently released report by the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, which is one of the world's leading science and tech think tanks, says that the United States is falling behind other countries. China, for example, is adopting robots at a much faster rate than everyone else in the world, and then within a decade, you know, could lead the world in robotics. So we need to do more in robotics. It's a hot field. It's the future. And, you know, this is the key to creating more jobs and helping our economy.
I would imagine if somebody is sitting, especially a young person now, thinking, what do I want to do with my life? This is an area that they should examine pretty closely.
Exactly. And, you know, the field is changing so quickly. Like I said earlier, history repeats itself as it did in the E-age. And classes are not always, you know, at universities, are not always keeping up with the trends. So what I recommend is a couple of things. First of all, is read all the journals you can on robotics, as well as artificial intelligence, machine learning, and sensors. Join groups, for example, on LinkedIn. you know, there's a number of robotics groups, medical robotics, et cetera, you know, is one that comes to mind. And also just keep abreast of what's going on in the field. So those would be three recommendations.
When a company is working with you to recruit, what sets a candidate apart from another? How do you choose one over the other, and how can those candidates market themselves better?
Well, as far as, let's take the last part first, marketing yourself. One of the keys, fortunately or unfortunately, to landing a job is selling yourself in the interview, and a lot of people don't do a very good job. And one of my mantras, Steve, is sell, sell, sell. What that means is every chance you have, you want to sell yourself as a solution to the hiring company's needs. To that end, you really need to research the company, because a sales pitch to one company is not the same as another. You want to find out what that company needs. And to that end, put yourself in the hiring company's shoes and ask yourself the question, how can I benefit that company? So research and selling yourself is the key to landing your job, as well as sell, sell, sell in the interview process.
And I'm guessing with this market being as hot as it is, you can pretty much go in and say what you want your salary to be. Is that the case?
No, I never recommend that. One of the other mantras I have is keep yourself open on the money, because whatever you state in the first interview is either going to be too high or too low. If it's too high, you're going to knock yourself out of consideration. If it's too low, you're going to cheat yourself out of some extra money. So it's never to your advantage to state a specific amount in the first interview. Instead, keep open on the money, try to qualify for the job, and then you can negotiate the money in later rounds.
Are there geographic places, Scott, in the country where robotics is hot? That is, are there cities where you can go and find better jobs than others, or geographically, is this spread out over the country?
Well, it is spread out across the country because of the spread of industrial robots. However, there are a couple of key areas, including the Silicon Valley and all the cities related to that, and also the Austin area around Texas. Those are two hotbeds for robotics right now.
You know, we talked to back to the libraries interview before you came on about what the future is going to be like. I know you've thought about this probably a lot as well. Robots in working side by side with humans, higher GDP, a happy, healthy economy, that would be the best case scenario, right?
Correct. But then there's also worst case scenarios, because, you know, the robots are going to replace jobs, and the jobs that are replaced, unless people retrain for other jobs, then there's going to be a loss of jobs. And that actually puts an emphasis on political leaders to invest more in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math education, which we've been slipping in. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. We're going to lose jobs. We're going to need jobs with robotics. So we need to keep up with the STEM education in our country, which has been slipping. So that's going to be a key emphasis of our leaders moving forward.
How much of a responsibility do the companies themselves have to retraining adult workers who have been in the workforce long time, perhaps half their lives or even all of their lives, most of their working lives? That those people are going to have to be retrained in those areas, aren't they?
That's correct. And a lot of companies, Amazon being one and a number of other companies, are actually spending a lot of money in retraining because, you know, the educational system in our country has been slipping in STEM. So there needs to be more of a push to retrain workers, but also there needs to be a partnership with companies and political leaders to invest in STEM types of education in order to actuate, you know, the future engineers in robotics and other technologies that take off in the future.
Scott, great conversation. How can people get a hold of you and have a conversation like this one-on-one, or get more of your expertise on this recruiting process?
Well, there's a couple ways. One is to go to our website at strategicsearch, all one word, .com. And I have a blog. I try to, every week or two, come up with new thoughts on the field. There's a free way to sign up for the blog. A second is to call our office at 312-944-4000. And if you also want to keep, like I said, the blog is probably the best way to keep abreast of some of my thoughts related to future hiring, engineering, and topics like robotics and artificial intelligence.
All right, very good. Scott, great talking with you again, and thank you for being on this morning.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Have a great day.
You too. Scott Sargis is the founder and CEO, president of Strategic Search Corporation. Again, you can find them online at strategicsearch.com.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures down nearly 200 points. Investors concerned about reports on growth slowing and ongoing trade worries. Dow futures down 177 points now, nearly 0.75%. S&P futures off 0.75%. NASDAQ futures off almost a full percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, the markets took a holiday yesterday, and on Friday there was little change in the grain market. Just to refresh your memories, March wheat ended a penny lower. March corn ended the day 0.75 cents higher. Soybeans ended 7.25 cents higher going into the holiday trading weekend. At the Mercantile Exchange, lean hogs for April, pretty good advance, up $1.75 a hundredweight. April live cattle up 52 cents, and the January feeder cattle contract down 17 cents. Here is a story that we get just about annually from our neighbors to the north. Canada's two major railways are rationing space on trains traveling to the country's biggest port, recently prioritized some commodities over others to deal with congestion. That move prompted Canada's transport regulator last week to start an investigation into rail services around Port Metro Vancouver after shippers complained of, quote, discriminatory treatment of certain commodities by Canadian National Railway and Canadian Pacific Railway. Canada is a top shipper of crops, fertilizer, oil, and pulp, but in recent years has needed government intervention to keep commodities moving into international trade. And free trade deals with the European Union and Pacific nations are boosting demand for commodities from Canada. Markets will be open today, regular trading hours. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning, and this goes along with our 540 conversation with Scott Sargis from the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Research shows that U.S. government could stand to benefit from the retraining of the vast majority of nearly 1.4 million Americans expected to lose their jobs to technology over the next decade. The study by the World Economic Forum, which begins today, found that businesses could only profitably retrain 25% of workers replaced by robots and other forms of automation. Success means putting the workers in jobs that require skills similar to those that they already have and that can pay more than the jobs they lost. The government could retrain 77% and still earn back its investment in the form of higher tax revenue and lower costs for unemployment benefits. 18% could be retrained by the government, but not in a cost-effective way. Retraining will cost governments and businesses $34 billion over a decade, according to the study. 5% could not be retrained, according to the study. The percentage of TSA workers, screeners, missing work has hit 10% as the partial government shutdown stretches into its fifth week. Transportation Security Administration said yesterday that Sunday's absences compared to 3.1% on a Sunday, comparable Sunday a year ago, were up about 10%. The workers who screen passengers in their bags face missing another paycheck if the shutdown doesn't end early this week or early next. Russia is beginning a legal action against Facebook and Twitter. Russia's communications watchdog agency opened administrative proceedings against both the companies for not following local data laws. The agency said yesterday Facebook and Twitter haven't explained how and when they'll comply with laws requiring them to store Russian users' personal information on servers in Russia. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for a Tuesday, January 22nd. Not a lot on the calendar today. The Red Book out, look at retail, perhaps in the wake of no official retail sales report because of the government shutdown. We're thinking we'll get existing home sales as well. A little bit later in the week, mortgage applications coming tomorrow, and then on Thursday, leading indicators, a report on natural gas supplies and also oil supplies and jobless claims and durable goods orders and new home sales coming on Friday. And companies reporting earnings today including include Wynn Resorts, Johnson & Johnson, Travelers, IBM, and Capital One.